This week's episode is sponsored by Fringe Supply Company, and I love them. And it is about time they started paying for an ad because I have been talking about them and posting pictures of their stuff for so many years. You're laughing because it is nice that they're sponsoring this episode, yes. But really, I do love their stuff.
Yeah.
I've bought so much stuff over the years from Fringe Supply Company, and today we're going to be talking about their field bag, mm-hmm. which is my new knitting bag, mm-hmm. which I just brought out of my office to show you.
Yes.
It is a sturdy canvas bag. It's a drawstring bag with a leather little shorty handle on it. We will certainly link to it in the show notes, but do you know why I love this bag?
Why?
Well, first of all, it's cool looking, but I don't like digging for stuff. I don't like deep bags where I'm digging, you know, like a rabbit to try to get down into the bottom of the bag to find stuff. This is kind of a shallow bag, and it opens up really wide. Yeah, it opens up really wide, and everything. Look at where's my row counter?
I see it.
Where are my double points?
I see them.
And also, there's a pocket the length of the bag, that which is where I've been dropping like double pointed needles and stuff, because like I have a hat in here right now, and eventually I'm going to need to switch to those. And everything is so easy to access. And every time I carry it around other knitters, they're always like, "That's a cool bag." I'm like, "I know." Anyway, they come in a lot of different colors. They are a good gift for someone, mm-hmm. if you're looking for a gift for another knitter. And they are neither masculine nor feminine, so they're really good that way. And you know what? I bet they can hold things other than knitting stuff.
Yeah.
If you wanted a cool bag for other stuff.
That's true. And do they come in different sizes? Do you know?
I think it's just the one size, but okay. It comes in a lot of different colors.
Yeah.
We will link to that in the show notes. So if you want to jump over to verypink.com/podcast, we will have a link to Fringe Supply Company. I encourage you to look around because they do have a lot of cool stuff for knitters.
And it's not just bags. I bought like just little tools, and they're so neatly, you know, curated and, you know, packaged.
Yeah, they don't sell like a ton of stuff.
Yes.
But they sell the coolest stuff.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay.
Awesome.
Welcome to the Very Pink Knits podcast, the companion podcast to the Very Pink Knits YouTube channel. I'm Stacy, and I'm here with Casey.
Hi there.
Casey is the media manager here at Very Pink, and she's also producing this show. If you'd like to get your knitting question on the show, just email it to podcast@verypink.com, and be sure to tell us where you're from. And this is episode 76, and you can see the show notes for this episode and all the links and photos, whatever we end up talking about. On my website, go to verypink.com and click the podcast tab and look for episode 76. Casey, how are you?
I'm great.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You ready to record a show?
I am.
And we have a little bit of your Thanksgiving vacation on this episode,
yes,
don't we?
We do. I'd like to double up my efforts when I go places.
Yes.
So
well,
I just
wanted you to get Irish accents on the podcast. Okay, do you want to talk a little bit about what you...
Sure. So last time I was there, when I went to O'Malley's, I bought some yarn from S-Twist Wool. And the story, I had looked it up later, and she had told me a little bit that the guy who was running this company was hand spinning it all himself.
Wow.
Yeah. And so she was trying to support his work. And so then I looked him up, and there's just this cool thing that he's trying to do where he's trying to do it sustainably. He's trying to keep it all in Ireland because a lot of the wool leaves Ireland. So I thought if he was around, I'd try to meet with him. So,
okay, let's listen.
So my name is Jimmer Commons. We are here in Dublin at This Is Knit, which incidentally is the first shop which stocked my yarn.
Oh,
they were the first one who gave me my chance. I am the owner of S-Twist Wool. I collect wool from Irish farmers. I wash, scour the wool. I send it off to be spun, and then when it comes back, I dye the yarn with chemical and natural dyes.
And so, as I was saying, I came across a story saying that not a lot of the Irish wool stays here. It goes on. So tell me about that and what you're trying to do.
It's amazing. There is such strong marketing for Irish wool. Irish wool is recognized all over the world, and basically the product itself doesn't exist.
Right.
It's absolutely amazing. In the around the start of the last century. Between the start of the last century up to the middle of the last century, basically all of the mills closed down around the country. Mm-hmm. And they weren't able to compete or keep up with A, British mills, and B, with the plastic yarns, the synthetic yarns. Our main handicap at the moment is that we don't have any scouring facilities in Ireland. Mm-hmm. So basically what that means is we can't process yarn in the country because there's nowhere to scour the yarn. Now scouring is so let's just go back a little. Wool, raw wool, about 30 to 40% of the weight of the raw wool is grease. Mm-hmm. And you can imagine the amounts of water and chemicals that is needed then to get that grease out. And the main hub for scouring, I think in Northern Europe, I believe is in Bradford in England. Mm-hmm. So whatever wool is processed, there's two destinations for Irish wool. One is straight off over to China, where it'll be used for stuff like carpets in airplanes, which will be, they're throwaway objects. They'll be used for 2 or 3 months and then they'll be just thrown out, and then new carpet laid down so that it always looks fresh. The other place to go then would be, of course, Bradford. It goes over to Bradford where it gets scoured, and then it will be mixed together with the British wool. Then the fact that it's mixed together with the British wool means that it can no longer be sold as Irish wool. Because when it goes over to the factories there, you can see the videos on YouTube. They are amazing. It's like the washing tanks may be 15 meters wide, and like tons of wool come in and tons of wool come out. And it's a continuous 24/7, 365 days a year type thing. So there's no way that you can send wool over and then get your own wool back. That doesn't exist. That possibility doesn't exist for the Irish industry. So I came to wool through weaving. I trained as a weaver when I left school, actually with Camp Hill. I don't know if you've heard of them. It's you have quite a few of them in the States. It's community type living with people with special needs. And I used to work with them when I was in school. Then when I left, I went to one here in Ireland, and then later on one over in England, specifically to train as a weaver. And then I went off. I lived in Germany for a while, and I lived in Brazil. And then after a long time, came back to Ireland. I've been here now this time, maybe 7 or 8 years. I came back with my wife. And I've always had a thing for wool. I love wool as material. And I started to get interested again in wool, not necessarily weaving this time, but finding out how the state of the industry was here. It didn't sit right with me, and I really wanted to try and do something to change, to see if anything could be done to change this. In recent years in Ireland, I don't know if you've had something similar in the US, but in recent years in Ireland, we've had a revolution in food. And instead of, shall we say, cheap mass-produced food, now we are finding, even in the cheaper supermarkets, you can find high-quality local produce. And I envisage something similar happening with Irish wool. Similar things are happening in the UK and also in the US, and I think that this is the future for Irish wool. So I started researching to see what it is that I could do about this problem, and my first breakthrough was finding out about a scouring technique that they use in New Zealand, which is a fermentation method. So basically how I understand it is that as the sweat of the sheep ferments, it turns into an alkali which helps break down the grease. Wow. So for a few years I've been using this method, and now I think actually next year I will probably move over to I suppose, a more efficient method. It's very slow, and thankfully business has been growing, so I'll need to find something more efficient.
How does it ferment? Like, what do you just store it?
You stick it in a barrel with water. it's an amazing...
Like a beer?
Basically, yeah. You stick it in a barrel with rainwater and you leave it sit for about a month.
Oh, wow.
And that kind of gets the fermentation going. And then you can take the wool out and you put in the next batch. And the next batch of wool only needs 2 or 3 days. And then as the batch gets stronger, you can just leave it in for shorter periods of time. And interestingly enough, I have... I was looking through a book on the way up on the train, actually. It's a dye book from, I think, Lyles is his name. And there's a recipe in it for indigo dyeing of a fleece. And it's very similar. It's that the fleece is... you wash the fleece and you keep that water aside, and then you scour the fleece. Then you put the fleece back into the dirty water with the indigo. And then the microorganisms and the dirt from the fleece is used to start the fermentation process for the fermentation dyeing of the indigo. So I'm really looking forward to trying that one out.
Yes. Sounds cool. So now somebody else spins your yarn?
Yes, I did. At the start, again, I used to spin a lot of, I do a lot of hand spun wool. I actually spent quite a while coming up with a wheel that would allow me to hand spin the quantities that would be needed. But then even with the wheel helping me, I actually got into problems with repetitive strain injury. And also there was just such a demand, thankfully again, such a demand and such support for what I was doing that now I've taken out the hand spun, and I'm hoping to replace that then now with the naturally dyed, which is a project I've been working on now for about the last 2 years or so. Finding whatever I can scavenge from the countryside and see kind of, okay, what can I use? And of course, the longest part of the project is testing for the light fastness, which is probably the most important part of the whole thing. But I'm quite happy with the results, and I'm hoping that I may have one or two things out for this Christmas, but hopefully next year really get into that. I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah. What are some interesting dyes that you've discovered that unexpected?
Potato tops. I mean, I find this is amazing. I still need to work out the recipe, but there is a yellow dye in potato tops.
Is that like the greens?
Yeah, the top, the part on that grow out of the ground, the leaves. That's and right, yeah. So I just find something hilarious about that.
That's so Irish.
Yeah, exactly. Yes, I mean, yes. So so there are the potato tops. Another thing I found interesting is as I started going into the subject, and moving away from thinking about the plants and thinking more about the actual dye components in the plants, where you will have your well-known dyes for yellows, for example, which will also be present in other plants, just in smaller quantities. So I've actually surprised at how many. By experimenting, how many sources of dyes I've been able to find that I wouldn't really have expected. But yeah, the main one's potatoes. The potato tops, yes.
That's wonderful. So it's just you, or do you have a...
At the moment, it's just me. I'm kind of coming to the point where I will probably need to start taking on other people, but at the moment, it's just myself. I'm very, very wary about taking on somebody. I have to say, up until now, it just brings it to a whole new level of responsibility, and it gives me a kind of a chill to think that I would be responsible for somebody else's wage packet.
Yeah.
I like the idea of telling people what to do, but I don't like the idea of being responsible for things on a whole new level. It's just a whole new level of responsibility and seriousness.
Yeah.
But yeah, it probably will have to happen next year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what is the more efficient method of scouring? Is that what you're
saying? Scouring. It would be as it is in the industry, hot water, and then see what environmentally friendly products are available to do that.
So what do you think the future is for Irish wool?
For Irish wool, I think it will move along the same type of lines as we're seeing in the United States and the UK in small producers, small farms having their own lines of yarn mm-hmm. and with some smaller mills operating. At the moment we basically have three mills operating in Ireland, but none which operate for small quantities. Mm-hmm. I also think that's going to change, especially now with Brexit. Brexit is really going to throw the cat among the pigeons. And in recent years, a lot of the new mills in the UK were funded by EU money.
Right.
And I don't think they're going to get the same kind of treatment now. So it'll be interesting to see how that works out, mm-hmm. And what kind of arrangements would be made for import exportation of wool, especially with Bradford as the scouring centre. All of that wool from Europe that is going there to be scoured, what's going to happen with that? And to be perfectly honest, I think it's a lose-lose for it. In this sense, the UK's loss is not going to be Ireland's gain. We're going to lose with it, even on the wool level, we're going to lose with it. But as I said, it will throw the cat among the pigeons. So it'll be interesting to see what way.
I don't know that phrase.
No? Oh, so if you imagine a group of pigeons.
Yes.
And you get a cat.
And you throw it.
And then you throw the cat into the middle of the group of the pigeons. And then kind of it's mayhem and all hell breaks loose. So
I'm going to start using it now.
Yes. So
wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah. And I kind of see what you're saying as far as like the food revolution and trying to know where your food comes from. And I see that. I think we do see that in the States. People are being more focused on American made and keeping it in the same place. So interesting. Well, I appreciate your time. That was
no
very
problem at
interesting.
All. It was lovely meeting you.
You too. And I wish you success with your company.
Thank you very much. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your visit here in Ireland.
Sure, we will.
That's cool, Casey. Thank you for that.
Yeah, I loved it.
I liked the interview, but I could listen to him talk all day.
I know. I just love the Irish people.
Did you ever get tired of that when you were in Ireland?
No. I think by the end of the week, we all started kind of putting a little lilt in our...
Yeah, because you're around it all the time. That's very cool. Okay, let's get into some knitting questions.
Okay, hi, Stacey and Casey. I'm so hoping you can help. I've finally gotten to the point where I'm actually finishing projects and garments, and now I'm having another issue. How do you attach buttons to knitted cardigans without them falling off in the wash? Every single time it happens, this last time, 4 out of 5 buttons coming loose. I tied what I thought were really tight knots, and I'm using 100% wool, not cotton or bamboo, which I know are slippery. Help, it's a little embarrassing when they are given as gifts. Stephanie.
Hi, Stephanie. I don't think I've ever had this problem before, but she must be using superwash wool if they're coming off in the wash.
Yeah, I'm wondering how she's washing it, if she's being a little aggressive.
You make her sound violent.
I know. She's really scrubbing that.
She's throwing it in like the heavy duty bedding load and just
with her jeans. Don't wash your sweaters with your jeans.
Yeah, don't do that. Maybe your buttons will stay on. No. I'm thinking that she's using wool, and I've never had this problem, but I'll tell you what I do and my buttons don't fall off is I triple knot.
Mm-hmm.
I sew a button on. I actually use the yarn that I used in the sweater to sew the buttons on, because you can use thread or something. And I triple knot them in the back and then cut it short, and then they stay on, mm-hmm. right? I also don't use heavy buttons. She might be using heavy buttons that are just pulling.
Yeah.
And then the last bit of advice I have is something that I've done before, which is to take ribbon and sew with thread the ribbon to the back of the cardigan button band.
Mm-hmm.
And that provides a lot more structure in the button band, and it'll also, I think, maybe help keep the buttons down.
Yeah.
I don't know. I've never had this problem. I've never had buttons. 4 out of 5 buttons came off her
sweater.
That's
crazy.
When it was in the wash.
Yeah.
they wouldn't fall off if she was hand washing.
Yeah, if it's 100% wool, you should be hand washing it unless it's super wash.
I'm thinking it must be super wash.
I don't know.
We have so many unanswered questions.
Stephanie, tell us more.
Stephanie, why are your buttons falling off? I don't know. Maybe someone is hearing this question right now and they know exactly what she's going through.
Yes.
Go ahead and leave a comment on the website for this episode so you can help us out.
Okay.
Okay.
Hi, Stacey and Casey. I've been knitting for about 2 years and I'm addicted. I enjoy lace knitting and realize how important blocking is to the final product. Aside from buying blocking wires, which seem to be pricey, can you suggest ways to...
She
didn't say pricey.
She says, I just want to say it because it's funny. Blocking wires can be $$$$.
$3. Can you suggest ways to block a triangular shawl? My first attempt gave my shawl scalloped edges. I prefer a straight edge. Thanks so much. I look forward to every new episode each week. Mary from DeWitt, Michigan.
Hi, Mary. I've never seen blocking wires be really expensive. I don't think they have to be. I think they can be like Home Depot kind of blocking wires if you find something like that. And they don't have to be, you know, heavy gauge. They can be really light gauge. But you don't have to use blocking wires. I've actually done most of my knitting in my life without blocking wires. And you said that you were getting a scalloped edge when you were using pins. If you use more pins, you won't get a scalloped edge.
Yeah.
Is that what you were thinking?
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah.
More pins.
More pins. Or there's the Knitter's Pride knit blockers that are those little, how would you describe the knit blockers?
They're like, I don't know. How do you describe it? It's like several pins and one connected into one little piece.
Okay, we better link to this because people are like, what are you talking about? Yes, it's like a little brick of
It's almost like a comb.
It's like a comb. Yeah. It's like a comb.
Or like a...
You would never want to use on your head.
What did you use in the 80s when you had a perm? A pick.
Okay, it's like a pick with very short tines that are sharp and you don't want to comb your hair with it. But you can stick those into a blocking board and they block, you know, like up to 3 inches at once.
Right.
Or pin out 3 inches at once.
Right.
Anyway, why are we working so hard to explain something that's so visual they can just click through and find?
They got it.
What I'm going to say is look at a few different places for blocking wires. They don't have to be expensive. There's nothing magical about blocking wires unless you're getting pure gold ones or something. They don't have to be expensive. And more pins is a solution or knit blockers, which knit blockers cost more than blocking wires.
Okay. Hi, Stacey and Casey. Thank you for all your help and information on knitting. I look forward to each week to another podcast. I feel like I have two more knitting friends, even though we've never met.
Aww.
Oh, my name is Ginny, and I'm from West Lafayette, Indiana. I'm knitting a bag in the round. Since it was stockinette stitch, I decided to knit it with the Portuguese method, and I'm purling the whole thing. Since purling in the Portuguese method is so easy, and I get more even stitches with it, now I realize I'm knitting it inside out. The pattern tells me to use an I-cord bind-off. Can I do this bind-off while purling? Or do I need to turn my bag inside out and bind off on the knit side? Can I even do that? I don't know if this makes any sense. How would you suggest I bind off so I have a nice finished edge? Thank you for any help you give me, Ginny.
Hi, Ginny. You're one of many people I've heard from who are using Portuguese purling instead of knitting for a lot of different reasons. And it sounds like you're getting better tension that way. Did you give it a try when I put those videos out?
No.
Okay. People really like it. You know, I'm happy with the way I knit, so
yeah.
I like trying new things and stuff, but I don't think I'm ever going to change the primary way that I knit.
Yeah, I've tried flicking since you did your flicking video, and I do kind of do it every once in a while, but
yeah. I don't know. If you've been knitting one way for a long enough time,
I'm
you're comfortable.
I'm an old dog.
No new tricks for you. But Ginny is asking about an I-cord bind-off, and an I-cord bind-off is going to look good on both sides of the work. It's like the whole point of an I-cord bind-off is that you have something that's kind of round and looks good on the front and the back and the bottom, you know, all. So it will work, but kind of a bigger answer to this question, because I get questions all the time that are just very, very tiny specific questions, like the question on what's the difference between slip knit and slip as if to knit slippers after purl, knit through the back, you know, like these really, really specific things. And I just always want to say, just put needles to yarn and give things a try and see what it looks like, because you'll learn so much more that way than you'll learn from just me like describing a stitch to you. Like when you have something that you want to compare one thing to something else, or you want to see exactly how this bind off is going to look on this thing, an easy way to tell is to actually do a few stitches, do a few inches of it, and see what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's way easier to actually see it for yourself and not just hear me talk about it.
Right.
We have time for one more quick one.
Okay. Hi, Stacey and Casey. I love the podcast and have been following your tutorials for such a long time now.
Such a long time.
I've been knitting for years, and for years I've had the following problem. When I'm changing from a knit to a purl with a yarn over in between, the yarn over is large. When I'm changing from a purl to a knit with a yarn over in between, the yarn over is small. Apart from each other and after blocking, it isn't so obvious, but when they are mirrored in lace, for example, it's bothersome to my process knitting brain. A good example of when this comes up would be a pattern reading knit YOP2YOK. I understand why this happens due to how far the yarn has to travel, but I've not been able to work out a solution. Have you experienced this issue? And if so, do you have any tips or tricks to address this? Thanks for all the wonderful work you do for us fiber enthusiasts. Bert from Orlando, Florida.
Hi, Bert. I know exactly what Bert is talking about. Do you know what Bert's talking mm-hmm. about? Okay, because when you are, I'm just going to explain a little, even though to everyone else, because you get it. But you go from knit yarn over to a purl, and the yarn over is 1.5. And you go from purl, yarn over to knit, and the yarn over is kind of half a stitch.
Mm-hmm.
And just like Bert said, there's going to be extra yarn just because the amount that the yarn has to travel. And it doesn't usually make much of a difference when it's blocked, but just like Bert said, you can see it if they're mirrored and they're close and they're in a lace pattern or something. And Bert, I'm afraid that's just kind of the nature of knitting. Mm-hmm. Usually I find after something's blocked and maybe it's been worn for a little while, you're going to see kind of things even out more, you know, like the other stitches are around the long yarn over are going to eat up that slack. And you know, it really isn't as noticeable as it is right after you knit it. Blocking takes care of it, and then kind of wearing it around for a while. Mm-hmm. But there isn't just kind of, it's one of those nature of knitting things. There's no way.
And I think a non-knitter is not going to notice.
Nope.
If you're wearing a shawl or somebody else,
you gave
them a shawl. They're not going to notice.
Nope, you're the only one who would notice.
Yeah.
Especially if all of your yarn overs are in the right place in the lace,
mm-hmm.
no one's going to notice that one of them is a little bit bigger than the other one. But of course, Bert's asking because Bert's trying to be the best knitter she can be, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
Okay. That is all we have time for after your awesome Irish interview. Casey, if people want to find you online and see your pictures of Ireland.
My website is Casey Knits, the letter K and the letter C.
And your social media buttons are there, especially Instagram,
mm-hmm.
which is where you posted
yes.
a lot of those photos. Okay. You can find me, of course, the Very Pink Knits YouTube channel. It's also verypink.com, and all of my social media buttons are at the bottom of the page. That is all we have for this week. So until next week, stay warm, my friends.